Last week, I shared kind of on a two-year journey, and it's not a journey I've necessarily chosen to take. God just kind of put me on this bus, and I would call it like the blood, sweat, and tears journey. I admitted last week there was no bloodshed, so if you're afraid that there's been bloodshed, I've not shed any blood, but there's been sweat and there's been tears. So as I'm sharing these things, I've kind of thought through them from how it relates to Scripture. And a lot of it's so familiar to us, it gives the impression of it's all clean and sanitary. But underneath the hood, there's a lot of dirt that's with that, and a lot of struggle. And the good news of it all, though, as I've gone through that struggle, God's really, you know, made things clearer to me. And as I thought about it, it's really just pounding into my head, what is most important? And, you know, I've been a believer for many years, and I've seen these things, yet so often it's easy to forget what's most important. And so, you know, all these things have been kind of right in front of my eyes all these years, and yet somehow there's dimensions of that I missed, the blind spots. But God has, you know, made it crystal clear this is not heavy stuff. So this is not a Bible study. This is just God revealing things to me. I'm sharing them to you. So it's a little bit, you know, informal conversation going on here and what he's done for me. So as I've thought about it, I've realized, you know, God has just made these things crystal clear what is most important. But as I mentioned last week, that's kind of like my left brain, which often goes into overdrive. And I thought, there's a lot of right brain people out here, so what's the right brain story to this? And then I came up with, well, this is really God's amazing love story. Because he has revealed his love to me in new ways that have been life-changing. This week, I got a chance to visit my parents down in Texas, and we went to Mexico, and I got a chance to walk by the Gulf. And you know, whenever you get out to the ocean, it's to me, it's breathtaking. And it just reminded me how wide and how deep and how long God's love is for us. And there seems to be no end to it. And you can just experience new parts of it, new avenues of that every day. And that was a good picture for me of what I feel like God's revealing to me. But it's also reminding myself what is most important. So with that, as I mentioned last week, I'm assuming that you've been rescued by the blood of Jesus, that you are already part of that love story, and now it's just living that out. You know, if that's not true, then you need to experience that love and become part of God's family. Just a real quick recap, seeing if you guys remember everything. We did a little math test last week. Remember our math test? That word is means equals. We kept it really easy, just something equals something. So on the top, we looked at the verse where love is greatest. And we talked about the greatest commandment, that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Love your neighbors as yourself. And then that God is love. So if you just replace is with equal, we've got that simple equation, love equals the greatest. The greatest equals love. And we're going to get into that today with 1 Corinthians. And then God is love. God equals love. Again, no Bible study here. This is like simple. And yet, this is what's most important. And so, this is a refocus on what is most important. Does anyone remember what that sun signal represented last week? I know I didn't really like talk about what that meant in math, but we used a Bible verse. Anyone remember what that was from? I'm going to quiz you on this, see what you remember. You don't remember, you weren't there. We talked about Abraham, and God made a greater nation. And so it's the idea is that we're all, the love that we have individually, when we add them up, that's what that sign means, adding up individual pieces, it adds up to more than what it is from the pieces. And so God said, I'm going to make you a great nation. And so God is in the business of giving us his love story individually. But then as we cooperate amongst each other, God's going to make us a great nation. He's going to make us a great body of fellowship at Fox Creek. He's going to make us a great family. Not because we're great, but God is doing that work within us. So as we work this out, it's not just us working it out individually, it's working it out collectively. and there's great value to that. How about the enemies? Do you remember we've got this guy right there, that poison sign? Remember which one did that go to? I know you guys remember that, I think. There was a few, which I heard it back there. Shame, yeah. And so the idea is that these are the enemies of love. And we had that shame there, that poison, because shame is one of those things that's part of that, things that happens under the radar. It can happen in Christian living. And that's where we put shame out there, and we put fear. And I even added one more out there, judgment. I shared how I realized that how judgmental I was of other people. And all those things are kind of in that same category of things that we as Christians can do to inflict pain on others. That's the opposite of love, and yet sometimes these go under the radar. We talked about in Genesis that there was, you know, at first they were naked and unashamed, and then they went and hid themselves. And so they felt like they, you know, their sin had taken over. How about that gun? Which one was the gun? Yeah, hate. Now, you know, last week I was not trying to prophesy. I was saying that that's something that we don't see much, and as Christians we don't deal with that. That's like an overt, someone pointing a gun at you and saying, I hate you. That doesn't happen too often. But hate was the opposite of love. And, of course, you know, this last week in Florida, we saw the result of that. And we all recognized very quickly that that's the opposite of love. But that's kind of the obvious one. That's the one the media likes to, you know, right, to put on the pedestal. And we know that as Christians. But we don't have to deal with that so much. And then, of course, the last one, by process of elimination, that timer thing is self. And for me, you know, that myself is the enemy of love. When I think about myself too much, I'm not thinking about others. And that's a 24/7 enemy. And so that clock's there just remind me I fight that enemy every day, every hour, every minute. And so those are some of the enemies that we've got to overcome in order to experience God's love. So for those of you who weren't here last week, there's the highlights. Okay, and then one more highlight from last week is we brought up the verse, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And so we talked about the left brain and right brain. It's your mind, it's your brain. And on the left side, the left brain, there's some characteristics we got there. You know, very rational. That's where we've got logic, which is where we have language. It's the how and the what. And, you know, we talked about how sometimes if you're in a project with someone, doing something maybe with your spouse or another family member, and you're working on something and everything's going smoothly, you're getting things done, and then all of a sudden something triggers, and then things get complicated. And you realize that you hit a nerve somewhere. And someone else that's on the opposite side of that is also not thinking about this, about the logic, about the how and the what. You know, their feelings were hurt. And then in order to resolve this, we've got to think about the right side of the brain. And the right side of the brain was the emotion, the why, the belonging, and somewhere in the course of, you know, the project, maybe what you've done inadvertently is you may have offended someone, you may have threatened them in the sense of their belonging, of their why, and because they felt threatened, that right side of the brain kicks in and fear takes over, and they can no longer think about the how and the what no longer is important for them. It's the why, and it's that injury that has occurred. And so you might be on the left side, they're on the right side, and then there's a lot of confusion there. And that's where the enemy comes in and steals and kills and destroys. And so as we work this out in practical ways, we've got to understand how the different parts of our mind work. We'll share more about that later as well. Okay, that leads to today. And today, we had the application. I asked you to think about this, how to apply what we did. So maybe, hopefully, some of you thought about it. What do others think about it? You know, if you say you love your neighbor, well, let's ask your neighbor, do you feel my love? Their vote should count for something. It's not just our own vote that counts. And that's the hard one. And then probably the best, though, is then to also look at what God says. And that's 1 Corinthians 13. And that is what we'll be doing today. So I'm going to pray. I'm going to have Jim then read 1 Corinthians 13. And then towards the end today, if God is leading you into sharing some of these things that we've talked about of love and how this works, feel free to share them with others. But only if you feel God's leading you to. And it doesn't have to be anything big or, you know, magnificent, but the key is if you feel like God's leading you to it, then we want to hear that. So that'll be towards the end today, just to let you know, get prepared for that. So if you want to turn to 1 Corinthians 13, and I was going to have Jim read this. Yes, please.
And now I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, then I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love.
Thanks, Jim. I know we're all probably quite familiar with those verses. We hear them at weddings. And, of course, at weddings, we're thinking about wedding cake and wedding dancing and whatnot. We're not really having our serious mind into it. So today, no wedding cake, no wedding party. We can think about love, okay? And I kidded about this last time a little bit. But, again, my emphasis here is that the focus of this is what is most important to God. And it happened to be the week before Valentine's, but it was not a Valentine's message. I'm all for Valentine's. I'm all for that. But what I think is important to think about is that this word love in our language is one word, love. You know, the Greeks, they have many words for it because it can mean many different things. But we often narrowly define it in our culture to mean something like between, you know, a husband and a wife or the eros, that narrower view of love. And that's wonderful. But if we're looking at from God's perspective, and like this chapter is just one chapter out of the Bible, God's talking about love, and he's not talking about it in a romantic perspective. He's talking about it, this is what we're commanded to do. This is how he's defining love for us. And so this is something that we need to be thinking about all the time. We've identified love is greatest, and there is a list of, you know, things that God says what love is, and what love is not. So love is patient, love is kind, love protects, love trusts, love hopes, love perseveres, love rejoices in truth. That's just a few of the items in that list. There's even more in that list if you want to go look for them. Love does not envy, love does not boast, love is not proud, love does not dishonor others, love does not seek self, love is not easily angered, love does not keep record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil. and love never fails. So I think what I want to encourage us to do is really expand that view of love into something that we think about all the time. Because this is what God says is most important. We're supposed to love people. And so whether or not we ever get comfortable thinking about, you know, saying I love you to someone, that I don't think that's the most important thing to say. You know, I think that's good to communicate I love you to other people. But I think what's more important is that we think about, you know, what God says love is all the time. And we try to put that into practice. And we can put that into practice anywhere. Obviously, we can put it together in our church life, our home life. And I'm going to share today an example of how it was put in place at work. There's no boundaries on how we think of love. And as we think about spreading the gospel, we think about doing that at work, how often do we think about the word love at work? You know, that's not a word that's in our vocabulary much at work. But if we want to have God's grace and forgiveness expand to work, love has got to be part of that equation. Again, we don't have to necessarily always say, I love you to your coworkers, but we should be loving them. And we should be prayerfully considering how can we love them? How does God want us to love them according to those things? And what ways are we not loving? So I think those are things that we ought to have on the front of our mind. I know you guys, we have such a mature body here, and you guys have your own stories. Maybe I'll even hear a couple of them today. I'll just share a couple of mine. These stories are just small. They're not big. But I think sometimes that's what we need to think about is love is small things many times. It's not the big things that matter. I'm going to pick on my brother-in-law, Jim. First of all, I got permission from his wife. So he said, go for it. But I don't know how many of you know the Manorfields. I have been thinking for a long time about getting a pool. Okay. Now, Jim's a realtor, and he's got that left brain turning. And he's thinking, you know, that pool doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up to value. We can put X dollars in it, and we're going to get X minus something else out of it. Okay, so that's Jim's perspective. Lori, on the other hand, she's thinking, oh, I can connect with people. We can invite people over, you know. And this is a part of her that Jim and I know for very well, that sometimes, you know, language is not part of that right side of the brain. Remember that? We can't sometimes put into words what she's thinking about this pool because it's not rational. But it's love in action. And so as a mature husband and wife, they talked about it, they prayed about it, and eventually they decided, I'm not saying there's a right decision or wrong decision, because sometimes the right decision is to say no. But for them, the right decision was to say yes. We want to invest in this pool, and we only had it for part of the summer last year, but it was amazing. I mean, I'm a left-brain person, I'm doing the math, and I'm siding with Jim's, like, yeah. And yet, it was amazing all the things that happened. I mean, you can't predict. It's that right side. It connects people. It's love in action. It's opening up the doors to the neighborhood, to whomever. There's no plan. It's just they're there, and they're doing whatever they can to clean it, to make sure it's a safe environment for everyone. But that's the vision for them, is to do that. And what I appreciate about it was looking at both sides of that, and then collectively as a team deciding to move forward. And it's, you know, who knows what God's going to do. And so that's just one example of how we can choose kindness and other things. And you never know what God's going to do. In even a smaller item, when I was in college, I was kind of at that fresh, I was just starting out, I wasn't quite sure where I was going to go. I had a Christian background, but it was kind of a formal Christian background. Wasn't real personable. I was Mr. Goody Two-Shoe in high school. That didn't work out for me. So I was thinking, maybe it's time to party. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I was lonely. And, when you're lonely, that's not a good thing. But God put me in this position where I was met with another guy who was going to a Christian group, Campus Crusade. And so I thought, I'll do that. And one of the things that led to loneliness was I felt excluded by a lot of my peers in high school, sports, whatever. And here, where I was with a bunch of people, and I was, freshmen, and these guys were sophomores, juniors, seniors, the establishment. One night, I remember this guy, Bob, just made some comments to me as we were going out on a social night. I don't remember exactly what he said, but I remember how much I felt like I belonged there. And it wasn't something that he was trying to do. I'm sure he would never remember he even did it. It was not effort on his part to do it. Bob was being Bob, and Bob cared about people. And he made comments to me that made me feel like I was welcome and I was wanted there. And I remember that, and I know that that was an important part of me deciding to hang with it. And God used that little bit of kindness. I mean, just the little bit of kindness made a big impact on my life. And so, as we come closer to God, as we share these kind words, kindness fills our heart, we can share it with others, we will never know what impact it has on others. But God will use those things. And sometimes we just don't know how that works. One more example, my son Ben went to college, and Ben, many of you may know Ben, Ben's even more left brain than me, and very analytical. And there was a kid that he got hooked up to freshman year. They didn't choose the roommates. He got paired with another kid. This kid struggled to make a D minus in school, okay? Good kid, good family, good kid, okay? But just was not academic. OCD, all over the place. He was just very unpredictable. And was always in for a good time. Well, he was paired with Ben, and I'm thinking, holy cow, what's this going to turn out to be? But I was amazed. Ben needed to learn from his friend, but Ben took upon himself to hang out with this guy, and Andrew was his name. And that had a huge impact on his life, Andrew's life, and his family's life, because we got to know his family later. And it wasn't anything Ben was trying to do. Ben was just being Ben and just felt like, I don't know. I never asked him why he did that, because he stayed with him for 4 years, and it was the oddest combination. And yet God used that in many ways. And so, again, it may not always make sense. You think that, if I just get paired with that right person, then I can, really love someone or, whatever. God will do things in amazing ways that we don't know about. And sometimes it's outside of our comfort zone. Like I said, I'm sure Ben learned some things from Andrew as well, because Andrew, had the opposites. And you learn things from opposite people. So there's some of my small stories, I was going to follow up with another story that I had. This one was from work. I have a friend of mine whose name is Paul, and I hired him. He was a really smart guy. He was from Oregon, and we needed him to run our product section and our IT department. And at that time, it was just basically me that was at the senior level. And so I needed someone to come alongside and help. I didn't know him very well, but I knew about him. And I was told that, that this is a guy that I should consider. He was extremely smart, very hardworking. And he's very passionate. That became very clear. I went out there and visited him once. He had, I think, 7 kids, another one on the way. that homeschooled, and when we came to his house, he had all the family out there, and he shared this story about Martin Luther, like went into the details of Martin Luther, and really you could tell he was passionate about history, Christian history, shared that, and that was really cool. Extremely responsible. If you needed something done, you went to Paul. Very responsible. And he was also a very strategic guy because we had, not getting into the details, but we had our whole IT department was outsourced in Washington, and he was the brother of the guy that was leading that team. So he was kind of like our bridge to him. So I'm thinking about reasons to hire him, and so all these things are clicking. And he took leadership. Again, he responsibility, he gave him something to do, he took leadership. And so we hired him, and things went really well. And so much things I liked about Paul. But this is a story also about blood, sweat, and tears. So here's the blood, sweat, and tears part about the story. As I got to know Paul more, I mentioned he had a family, and very devout person with his family. But then as I learned later, he spent all of his time with his family. And he had that, he was not part of a church fellowship and was very isolated with that family. And so, you know, for me, that was a red flag. This is, of course, something I learned later. Very smart guy, as I mentioned. But I realized later, he needed recognition with that smartness. And so there was always this need that Paul needed to have that recognition. He was very hardworking. I remember in our meetings that we'd have, you know, he's on video, so we're on either Skype or some other video thing, and we're having these conference calls, and he would always be eating during these calls, or he'd be on this treadmill. And so this guy is always in motion. And that just, you know, that doesn't come across well to the people he's leading, because you kind of get the idea you don't have time to, you know, stop eating in this meeting. You know what I'm saying is that it leads down, and from his mind, he wasn't aware of how these things were impacting the people he was leading. But again, that busyness had a dark side to it. Very passionate, as I mentioned. But as I learned later, he wasn't open to for change, to be coached. And so that passion closed the door on new information, being coached on some things that need to be coached on. When I went out there, he told me stories about Martin Luther. Then I hung around with him later, and he told more stories. And the more stories he told, I realized that he, in his mind, had everything figured out. He had the reason why World War I came down to one thing. And, you know, he had this whole history of knowledge, but he had it all figured out into one or two, you know, just this tiny little package. And this belief system that he had was very strong and wasn't open for new ideas. And this knowledge then ended up becoming a sword that prevented him from openness to other people. I said he had responsibility, but he didn't understand boundaries. And so if he saw a problem in another area of the company, he would insert himself to try to fix it and overstep boundaries. And that is a danger when we try to exercise love, is when we don't respect boundaries. Jesus had boundaries that he respected, and we'll get into some of those later, but we need to understand the boundaries that God has given us and respect those. I mentioned that his brother was a real strategic person for to connect to. Well, I found out that clouded his judgment on his brother, and so there was issues with his brother that was going on that clouded this Paul's vision of that, and so that made that a double trouble, because now we had two problems out west that we were trying to deal with, and so that what I thought was going to be an asset turned into a liability, a problem. And he took leadership, But he also then put people under the bus. He, you know, people didn't meet up as to his expectation. He would criticize them in meetings, and then that destroyed the team. And so, it was a very difficult situation to get out of. But on the appearance of it, you know, if you look at the left side and the right side, you probably see characteristics there on both sides. We think that there's a wide gap between the left side and the right side because they sound so different. But in the world we live in, I think that there's a very narrow line between those two sides. And as Christians, we always think that we're just on that left side, and yet it's just a small step. As I mentioned with Paul, he had all those things on the left side, and yet there was a thing on the right side that most of the things he was not even aware of. He's a great brother of the Lord. You know, I love him. We've got a good relationship. I was able to end it well, but it was painfully difficult. But what I learned was that there is such of a fine line between those two. And we need to be careful that we think that it's very obvious that we're not on that right side when we can be on both sides. And that's why it's good to get feedback from others to tell us, okay, you know, where are we at? And so with that, we've got a few minutes left. I don't know if anyone wants to share anything that they've feel like God's leading them to share about how God's used their great love story in their lives. Yeah, Dennis. Yeah, it's not often the words. It comes across in the tone, the care, and so many other things besides the words. Good. Well, if there's anything else that you, I know a lot of you weren't here last week and weren't aware, but if you want to share next week, I'll try to leave a little time for that as well. And as I close, I want to think about, I remember where I point this thing to, or we'll just try the manual way. And maybe it's locked up. We'll just, okay, it's confused. We'll see how we do things on the fly. All right, so I mentioned I was in Texas. So this is the Love Y'all. I don't know if you know, Love Y'all is singular. All y'all, that's plural. So in the, I added a new formula there. This one gets more complicated because there's a plus sign on the left. But remember the widow that gave the small offering, and God, and Jesus said how she gave the greatest. And so that equation is, if you give a little bit, but it's with love, it's a blessing. Or if you want to look on the opposite side, in 1 Corinthians, it said you could give all things away, but without love, then it's nothing. So whichever side of that equation you want to look at, That's God's economy. Where, you know, the key factor there is whether there's love. So we often think that, you know, it's about quantity, but the main ingredient we need to have is love. So there's, you know, the key parts, some of the key parts of the 1 Corinthians 13, and I just think about that believes all. And as we think about what we believe in, you know, we believe in so many different things. But I think as we sometimes believe too much about things, it can close the door to the gospel. And what I mean by that is, remember that belief part is kind of the right side of the brain. And people want to hang out with people that they have the same beliefs in. And so if I believe that, you know, Iowa Hawkeyes are, you know, the best team, I've just shut myself off to, you know, the rest of the world who doesn't believe that. Now, I'm not saying I can't be a Hawkeye fan, but you know what I'm saying is that we get so belief about, you know, maybe there's a Republican or a Democratic Party where we think, you know, that's the right way and everything else is the wrong way. Or whatever things that we have may get strong beliefs on, we miss out on the opportunity of connecting with other people who have different beliefs. Now, I'm not talking about the beliefs that are central to our Christian faith. I'm talking about the many other beliefs that we kind of get that are more cultural, that really, you know, there's not a right or wrong, even though sometimes maybe we might even think that there is. And so as we communicate and believe all things, we need to believe that about other people. That some things that they may believe in that are different than us, we need to believe that, you know, God can work through them, and that we need to open up the doors to how other people are believing and respect that and try to find a way to, you know, find common ground in that belief. So anyway, that's just a little encouragement to us. That's my left brain encouragement, so you got the list. And now my right brain encouragement is this picture. And I don't know how many of you guys know what this picture is. Maybe I want to ask Jerry. Jerry may not be. I know he'll probably know. We were at Harrigan, Texas, yesterday. And this is at the Marine Corps. This picture was taken during the, this is from the war in Iwo Jima. And that was, actually commemorates tomorrow is the anniversary of the beginning of that war or that that battle. And it was the Marine battle, and they say it's kind of the worst Marine battle of all time. And this was commemorated for remembering all the Marines that have died in battle. And so, you know, I learned more about the battle. It was horrific. What these people did was very, you know, amazing. And the photographer that did that, that took that picture, won a Pulitzer Prize, and then there's a whole story behind how they got that thing put together. But the point is that those things are wonderful examples that we can look at to be inspired from. But in God's economy, we don't need to have shrines made of things that we do. We don't need the big and mighty things to love. And so don't think that as you... It's good to be inspired by these things, but in God's economy, remember, little plus love equals blessing. And so don't think that you know, you can't love if you're not involved in something that is big, because God will take the smallest of things and make it a blessing. And so I just kind of wanted to contrast this, which is a wonderful memorial, and yet not be overwhelmed by thinking big is better in God's economy, because he takes small things, and those are just as important to him, and makes those a blessing. So next week, I'm going to finish up, and one of the things we're going to be looking at is the story of Mary and Martha. Because I think about it, if we focus on, you know, what is most important, what is being busy, and this part of God's love story, that's a wonderful parable to look at to see what, you know, Jesus has to say about this part of the love story. So if you want to read something ahead of time, that would be something to look at. That's in Luke, I believe Luke chapter 18, if I remember right.